The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Hi there, welcome along to the Women's Football Podcast. I'm Hamish, this is Kieran.
Hello mate, after a very dodgy journey on the tube, I am a little bit frustrated but glad to see you, my friend.
Yeah, quite the opposite, I've just come from a party. Anyway, what have we got on the show today?
Okay mate, so seeing as you've just been partying, I might as well do the work on this one. So we've got the UEFA Women's Champions League draw that took place this week, so we'll have a little chat about that and the fact that Lyon were knocked out, surprisingly, in the previous round. You were lucky enough to be invited to the FA Awards because you're clearly more important than I am.
Yeah, you weren't.
So we'll talk about that, and obviously we've got a few interviews from there. So you obviously were very busy while you were there and not just partying away. We'll have our usual roundup with Brian, who will be covering Germany, and we'll obviously have a chat about what's going on in France. We'll have a look at the US women's national team's victory over Brazil, and we will also have a look at some of the transfers and trades that have taken place. And speaking of trades and transfers, we will be speaking to Seattle Reign's latest transfer, Kim Little.
It's all going off, so let's get going.
The Women's Football Podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at WFPod.
Right, so plenty of talking points in the Champions League. Most notably, Lyon are gone.
Yeah, surprise result of the last round, wasn't it? I mean, I think most people had them down as not only winning the round, but probably winning the whole competition. But credit to Sabina Potsdam, you know, they lost the first leg but came back and did the job in France, which is no mean feat. And I think that was the first defeat that Lyon have had at home since something like 2006. So very impressive for Sabina, and I think we can both say that we're both delighted for our blogger Ada Hegerberg, who led the line superbly in both legs.
Congratulations Ada, well done. So who have they got in the next round?
They have got, I believe it's Torres from Italy, so not an easy task, but they should overcome that one, seeing as they've just knocked Lyon out. They will be favourites for that one. Wolfsburg have been drawn against Barcelona. They will obviously be fancied for that one, seeing as they are the current holders. They have been dominant in this competition. Tirso have got Neulenbeck. Do you want to correct me on that one?
No, Neulenbeck, that sounds good to me.
Okay, so they've got Neulenbeck from Austria. So Tirso fancied as one of the favourites because of the strength in their squad, but be interesting to see if their American players return after the winter break, because there are obviously rumours that the NWSL and US soccer want them all representing a club in the American League next season, so it will be interesting to see if the American players return. And the final game is, of course, an all-English affair. We've got Arsenal ladies and Birmingham City ladies, so it'll be a really interesting one. Arsenal obviously overcame Glasgow City in the last round, so I will be interested to see how they do against Birmingham, because they've overcome Zorki of Russia, but we don't really know what sort of team Arsenal are going to have, because obviously
neither Birmingham actually.
No, that's true. Obviously Birmingham have lost Laura Bassett, which we'll talk about in a bit when we talk about our transfers. Arsenal, we've already mentioned in our intro, have lost Kim Little to Seattle. We're going to speak to her a bit later, so it'd be interesting. And you do worry that if they are losing players, and they could lose more before the Champions League recommences in March, you know, how serious contenders are they? How are they going to be able to compete with Potsdam and Wolfsburg?
So at this stage, who do you see as the favourites for the Champions League crown?
Can't look past Wolfsburg, mate. Really, really can't. They were so strong last year, overcame Lyon in the final. They're just as strong this year. Players like Lena Gersling and Kessler, and so many decent players, Alexandra Popp. I just can't see past them, but Arsenal will be, don't rule them out, Arsenal will be gunning for it. They obviously need to win the tournament to qualify for the Champions League next year. Tirso will fancy the chances if they can get their American players back, so it's going to be exciting, mate, really excited.
I'm going to go with Sabina. I'm going to call it Sabina. Just fancy them, dark horses, I fancy them. Right, obviously we've just spoken about Birmingham and Arsenal, which leads us nicely into a little look at the FA Awards, which will come up after this.
The Women's Football Podcast. Listen to the podcast via SoundCloud. SoundCloud.com/WFPod.
Okay, so in a change of roles for this section of the podcast, I'm going to take on the presenting role and Hamish is going to take on the expert role, because we are going to be talking about the FA Awards. As we mentioned in our intro, Hamish was present at the event in London, actually earlier today on the day that we're recording. So Hamish, how was it? What did you see? What did you learn? And how was the food and how much did you drink?
Well, the food was fantastic. Anyone who knows me knows that any good day starts with a good meal. So, no, it was a great event. Obviously, you know, it's a celebration of all things women's football. A lot of the sentiments not only apply to this country, but all around Europe. And it was a great day and some very worthy winners.
So let's have a look at those winners. Obviously, you were there. One of the awards that was given out was for Goal of the Season, which was won by
Steph Horton.
For her goal against Lincoln Ladies, an absolute screamer in the last minute from 25, 30 yards out, curled into the top corner, a worthy winner.
Sorry, mate, I thought you wanted me to explain all that, but I didn't really continue, did I? Sorry.
Apologies. No, I'm butting in. Obviously, this change of roles is failing within the 2 minutes of the change. So, but obviously, before that, the top scorers from each division, or certainly from the main divisions from last season, were handed out. Can you remember who they were?
I remember Beth Mead of Sunderland got the National Premier League Division top scorer, and Tash Dowie of the WSL. I'm going to kick myself now because I cannot remember the first two. In my defence, they were the first awards handed out on the night, and that was a long old time ago.
Okay, well, we'll put that down to a few beers as your excuse, but we will certainly look those up because I was actually in my day job today, so I didn't actually get to follow the awards. So we will look those up. But the main awards on the night were Club of the Year. So do you want to tell us who won that one?
Yeah, a very well-deserved award for Bristol Academy. Obviously, they've had a great season on the pitch, but an equally fantastic season off the pitch. And I actually caught up with their all-round busybody, Lowry, after the award, and she was clearly delighted. Lowry, congratulations, Club of the Year.
Thank you. We're so thrilled to bits because not only do we put in a huge effort into what we do on the pitch, but it's our off-pitch activities that we really want to be recognised as a club.
And you've been quite busy in that.
Yeah, it's been a whirlwind. We've made full-time in March. It really has been non-stop. And the main reasons for that is for working with people like Kevin Hamlin, our president, and Mark Sampson, obviously the first-team manager. It's just been, because they are so highly motivated and they've got such a dream and ambitions of where they want the club to be in the next kind of 3 to 5 years, you just have to crack on with stuff. There's no sitting still, there's no kind of, you know, long lunches. It's, you know, working long hours, putting the work in, and it's great that we've been recognised for all the work that we do in the community, really.
And the manager and the players, they support you so well, don't they?
Absolutely, because a lot of it with us is with our community programme. Our camps have been really successful recently. Our last holiday camp, which was in the October half term, we had 81 girls and boys attend, which is huge. And it's all delivered by our WSL players, which I think is something like quite unique compared to the other clubs. The fact that we've got half of our team coaching at our holiday camps, and these young girls and boys have got access to these really positive sporting role models, and being allowed to kind of spend all day with them, being coached, picking up new tips, things like that. We've got some really highly qualified coaches in our group as well. Two of the girls will be licensed coaches. There's three or four that are kind of level twos on working towards their youth modules. So they're a highly qualified bunch of coaches as well. And it's great that their work off the pitch is being recognised.
Brilliant. And then obviously tomorrow, the hard work starts to retain your title.
Absolutely. And people keep saying, oh, so what do you do in the off-season? I think they think that we just hibernate and we go on holiday. Well, it's getting things sorted for next season. We've got really big ambitions with our community programme to kind of double the kind of numbers that we've got on our camps. We recently launched our Mini Vixens programme, which is for 5 to 7 year old kids, which is run by Anghara James and Lauren Haynes, which is going from strength to strength. So we really want to kind of focus on that kind of age group, introducing young girls and boys into football and making sure that they have a really positive experience with the game and fall in love with the game at such an early age. If we can kind of capture their enthusiasm for the women's game, kind of 5 years old, we hope they're going to be Bristol Academy fans forever, for life, you know?
Brilliant. Congratulations.
Thank you, Hamish.
So that was Lowry Williams, an incredibly dedicated individual off the field, and congratulations to her and Bristol Academy. I've just looked up who the two scorers were in the National League, seeing as you'd forgotten. It was Fran Kirby of Reading in the Southern Division and Jodie Mikowska of Sheffield FC in the Northern Division.
That's it. There you go.
But obviously you mentioned the fact that Beth Mead was the top scorer in the National Premier League, and you had a chance to speak to her, and here's what she had to say.
Times is that
back
now? Twice? Three times?
Twice. Second year here. 29 goals last season, 30 this season, so I bettered what I did.
Been a good season for you then?
Yeah, very good. Started off a bit rough, but we eventually got going, and the health competition, it was very close to the Leeds this season, right to the end game again, so. But it was all health competition, we did very well.
So obviously you're going to take the goals into the WSL2 next year?
I'd like to think so, yeah, hopefully. Obviously we need them, and we're pushing to get straight into WSL1, so goals would help with that, yeah.
I was going to say, is obviously you are going for promotion straight off the bat.
Yes, well, that's our aim, it's our main goal, try and get straight into SL1, try and build the team and try and interest new players.
I was going to say, obviously, you know, Sunderland have been at that level really strong. Do you need to add players, or do you think you're good enough to do it with the squad that you've got?
With the squad we've got at the moment, I think we're good enough. We play well as a team, there's a lot of good individual players. So I think that we can push to get into the one without any help off any other big players. But when you get into WSL1, we might have to change things again because people might know what we're all about.
And obviously, from your point of view, personally, you want to play at that highest level, don't you?
Yeah, I would love to. WSL's my goal, and to play for the seniors eventually, so... pushing for both of them is what I want to do, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Cheers.
Congratulations.
So that was Beth Mead on winning her award for Sunderland Ladies FC, and of course she was one of two winners from the club, as Mick Mulhern was also voted the National Premier League Manager of the Season. Congratulations to him as well. A few more awards that were handed out. Two went to Liverpool Ladies Tash Dowie, who won awards for Hamish.
She won top goal scorer in the WSL, as everybody knows, but she also scooped player's player. So a very prestigious award there.
Yep, arguably the most prestigious on the night. And it was a triple award night for Liverpool, because manager of the year went to...
Well, Matt Beard. And if winning the WSL wasn't enough, they've had a great day today. A great day. And very well deserved. Obviously, a lot of people were saying that it could be Mark Sampson of Bristol, could be Matt Beard. Matt Beard scooped it, and I managed to catch up with him after the awards.
As well as Tash Dowie, so here they both are, one after the other.
Well, quite a good night for you. Pleased?
Yeah, I'm chuffed. I mean, I've said before, like, you know, it's not just about what I've done. The staff deserve credit, and so do the players. And for me, it's a nice accolade to obviously win a manager of the year, but you know, my players and the staff deserve a lot of credit for that, and I thank them.
is this something that, you know, after a long hard season you can sort of sit back on and enjoy?
Of course it is. I mean, you know, the players deserve recognition right the way across the board, not just Liverpool players, but players that for other teams as well, because it's been a great season. And I think going forward with the second tier coming in, it's going to be an exciting year next year. Probably be the best for women's football, and it's good that the FA can recognise the work that goes into the women's game from the players and the clubs themselves. And obviously the lady that won the award at the end there for what she does at Chelmsford, I mean, it just sums it all up really.
Obviously when you win the league, you're a shoo-in for manager of the year, surely?
I don't know. Look, Mark done a good job at Bristol, didn't he, with his shoestring budget, as they say. You know, but no, I mean, you know, John had a difficult job at Doncaster with the announcement coming so early, and you know, I was just lucky and fortunate that we had a good year, and you know, we eventually won the league, so it could have gone either way, I guess, between me and Mark. And even Shelley had a good year with Arsenal, winning two trophies, so she was unlucky not to, I guess, to get the trophy.
Obviously, a lot of people will say with the investment that you've had, but you're the one who's brought them all together.
Yeah, but I think, listen, we ain't got the best budget in the league. I just want to make that clear now, you know. I was speaking to Mark the other day, and they're playing budgets bigger than ours, so... Look, we've got a competitive budget, we've got great facilities, we've got great infrastructure, and the fact that we train every day has been the biggest thing that for us this year. And I think you can see with the fitness levels, and you can see with the way that we were playing, because we had time to work the players individually, like Tash Dowie. You know, we'd spend 5-10 minutes of our after training quick finishing, quick decisions, and you can see that within our performances. And I think for me, the key goal that summed that up was the one against Birmingham. Instinctively, she just, you know, hit the shot that come off of Farah. So, you know, we're looking to, again, to improve our setup, and that's something we're striving to do, and we'll be as competitive as we can to compete domestically and in Europe next year.
And just finally, obviously, the most exciting thing is this is just the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, we're a year into what we had as a three-year plan, and we're already a year ahead of ourselves. So, you know, obviously I would have took that, but it's important for me, the challenge now is to keep the players grounded and make sure we don't get carried away what's happened this year. We improve as a squad and we compete to win the division next year.
William, thank you very much.
Cheers, mate.
Nice to meet you.
Top man.
Been quite a good night for you.
Yeah, it has been. It's been a dream night, to be honest, to win the WSL title, firstly, to get Golden Boot, but then, to be honest, I'm kind of in shock about the players play. I wasn't expecting that, so that's a great achievement, and I'm really thankful to all the girls that voted for me.
Which one of those trophies do you prefer?
Probably, it's hard. The players player is a huge one, and like I said, I'm shocked about this one. The Golden Boot has always been a target for myself. I've always got top goal scorer in every team, but not in the whole league, so for me that was a big one this year. But probably the WSL title was my favourite. But to get that recognition from the players in the league is a huge thing. So to get the players play, yeah, I'm over the moon. Really, I'm delighted.
It's quite a turnaround, because obviously your last season at Everton was really frustrating for you. To now win so many things, must be over the moon.
Yeah, I had a bad injury last year, to be honest, and I played through it a lot, which I probably shouldn't have, which is, as you can tell, I scored one goal all last season. So I wasn't fully fit whatsoever, so I felt like I needed a fresh start, and that's why I signed for Liverpool. I got my head down and got myself fit again and really worked hard in pre-season. And Beardy's worked really hard on me to work on my one-on-one game and my finishing. And like I said, I mean, there's no coincidence I've scored 19 goals in 21 games. I've been working really hard to work on my goal scoring. And Liverpool itself has been a great club to be involved in, and I'm so glad that we won that WSL title this year. I think we really deserved it.
Just how much of an impact has Matt Beard had on your game?
Yeah, hugely. The amount he's invested in me, the faith that he's had in me, the confidence he's had in me. He's given me that belief that I'm the best striker in the league, and it's important to have a manager that you know respects you and respects what you're doing. I respect what he does as well, and I want to work hard for him and I want to play well for him. I think that's so important. And like I said, he's taken a lot of time away from the training ground to work on me with anything that I want to improve on, and I think I can't thank him enough, really.
And obviously party tonight, but then tomorrow it all starts to win back that WSL title.
Yeah, 100%. I can't wait for pre-season to start. I think it's January the 15th. We're back in training and get all the girls back in as well, and really focus on next year and hopefully retaining that title and winning more trophies as well.
Lovely. Thanks,
Tash.
So that was Tash Dowie and Matt Beard of Liverpool Ladies FC talking about their awards. But there was one final accolade that was handed out on the night, wasn't there, Hamish? The Special Achievement Award. Tell us about that one.
Yeah, it was. It went to a woman called Dawn Barnard, who has effectively built up football for girls and women in Essex on her own, on a volunteer basis. You know, a fantastic VT showed exactly what she did. I think the staggering thing is, it's all volunteered. You know, she initially started a five-a-side league, and suddenly it's grown and grown and grown and grown and grown, and now she's got all these roles. In fact, Jackie Oatley made a joke about the sheer amount of titles that this woman has, and it was good to see someone like that, who puts in so much hard work for young girls and women, honoured on the day. It was fantastic, and she was made up, so very pleased.
We like stories like that, and I think one of the things that came out of today's awards ceremony for me was the announcement that £2.4 million is going to be invested into girls and women's football at grassroots level. There is a partnership between the Premier League, the Football League and Sport England over the next 2 years, where the ambition is to get 40,000 more girls and women up to the age of 25 interested in the sport. A really, really good investment, part of the FA's five-year plan to get more girls and women interested in the sport, and they are aiming to make it the second most participated team sport behind men's football. So fingers crossed that pays off. Obviously, having people like the winner of the Special Achievement Award will certainly help in raising the profile of the game and getting people involved in it. So let's hope that that £2.4 million is well spent, and fingers crossed more girls and women get into it. So
yeah, I just want to say just quickly, I've been to a couple of these awards now, and today obviously Dawn from Essex won, but last year forgive me, I forget the guy's name, but he did something similar in Northamptonshire, and it's fantastic that people are so willing to dedicate their lives to even in one area of the country, to give so much time and effort to build up the game in that area is phenomenal. So well done to everyone who gives their time willingly to boost the game.
I like the fact that you mentioned I've been to a couple of these awards recently, knowing that I wasn't invited today, so cheers for that. Just another reminder, much appreciated. So that's the FA Awards. Hamish obviously had a good time. I was at work, so it's all good. But we will come back after this short break.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Plenty of trades and transfers to sink our teeth into, but first, let's cross over to Brian to deliver his report on the latest over in Germany.
Women's football in Germany is heading towards the winter break and can look back on a successful 2013. The national team played their fourth qualifying game in Slovakia on Saturday. Anja Mittag was playing her 100th game for her country and celebrated with two goals. The Germans ran out 6-0 winners in the end, a good result, but Sylvia Knight was less than convinced by the first half performance. Still, with 32 goals scored and none conceded, the Germans are well on the road to Canada. Meanwhile, in club football, Wolfsburg and Turbine Potsdam are flying the flag for Germany in Europe. Wolfsburg will play Barcelona in the quarterfinals, having gotten through a tricky tie against Malmo. Meanwhile, Turbine Potsdam have been more or less rewarded for their legendary victory in Lyon with a game against Torres from Sardinia. Not the easiest game, but also definitely not the hardest game that was left open for them. And both teams, if they go through, will play each other in an all-German semi-final. Domestically, however, it's not Turbine Potsdam or Wolfsburg who are making the headlines, but FFC Frankfurt. Frankfurt are 3 points clear at the top of the table and are playing some really good football. They beat Wolfsburg in the second round of the Cup. A tough game, but Frankfurt deserved it over the 90 minutes. Wolfsburg were very sluggish and, apart from a penalty claim, had very little to show for themselves. Frankfurt have always had one of the best teams on paper, but suffered last season from inconsistency that cost them a place in the Champions League. With their English manager this year and Celia Sasic scoring goals for fun, it looks like they may have turned that corner. But everyone is looking for the big match on the 8th of December. The Old Firm derby against Turbine Potsdam will decide who goes into the winter break on top of the table. The other story in the Bundesliga concerns Bayern Munich, who've had a bad run of it. Dropping 2 points away to Sindelfingen, the league's whipping horses, was followed up by getting knocked out of the cup by 2nd Division Cologne. And their injury list keeps getting worse. Lena Lotzen re-injured herself in training and will be out until the beginning of the second half of the season.
The Women's Football Podcast. Follow the podcast on Twitter at WFPod.
You'll notice there that I did mention France. That's because Lyon are winning and top of the league, and everything else is basically going to type. So let's have a chat about some trades. Let's start with Chelsea. Few ins, few outs. Who's come in?
Trades, and that is something we usually associate with America. We'll talk about transfers, mate. We'll talk about transfers.
No, trades and acquirements.
Okay, all right, we'll go with that. So Chelsea announced a few weeks ago that they had signed Rachel Williams, who had obviously been released by Birmingham, unsurprisingly, because we barely saw her the second half of the WSL season. So I think that's a good signing. Really, really good signing. Really like Rachel Williams. Think she will be looking to play her way back into the England squad. You know, the new manager is still yet to be appointed, so she's got someone to impress. She will, of course, replace Helen Ward, someone that we get on very well with, because Helen has left Chelsea, hasn't she?
She has indeed, yeah. It'd be interesting to see whether Rachel Williams continues with her plumbing career. That's the best thing about Rachel Williams. I love that. Keep going, please.
I think you'll find it's plastering, mate.
Oh, it is. It is. That's embarrassing. Anyway, swiftly moving on. Any more ins and outs at Chelsea?
Not at Chelsea, no. But obviously there are some rumours floating around that potentially Laura Bassett could end up there. But at the same time, Laura Bassett is a free agent because she's been released by Birmingham City Ladies. And I think that we'll feel that rumour because they do have the opportunity there to fill in a nice spot at centre-back.
Let's not forget that Man City are throwing awful lots of money around. They've obviously captured two England internationals already.
Yeah, Jill Scott and Karen Bardsley, which was announced just today. So, Jill Scott, you'll know better than I will, mate, being an Everton boy. Maybe you'd like to comment on that one.
I actually broke the news, in fact, doing the J job. Obviously, a big loss for Everton, but after 7 years, I think she's earned the chance to move on and enjoy a new challenge. And I think she's going to add her bustling,
parrying, to and froing style of play to Man City, and obviously with the addition of Barnsley as well as an established international keeper, so two great signings. You'd imagine that there will be plenty more trades coming up in the next few weeks.
I think so. There's lots of rumours floating around, and it's not our job to start them or to feel them. We've heard quite a few, and I don't think it's right for us to talk about them on here. We'll always talk about them when they've actually happened, but it's not for us to go saying this is going to happen and that's going to happen. But we've heard a lot of names mentioned going to different clubs. I think the next few weeks will be really interesting. I really do. I think before Christmas we'll see some more moves. Liverpool are expected to make a few signings. I think Tash Dowie made that clear in an interview today at the FA Awards. I think Man City haven't stopped. They will need to sign players because they finished fourth in the National Premier League last year. They're going to have to sign a lot of quality to be able to compete in the WSL, and they've obviously signalled their intentions with the signings of Scott and Bardsley. Arsenal obviously need to replace Kim Little. There's a few rumours about players coming in there, but also some rumours about players leaving as well. So it'll be interesting, very, very interesting.
Absolutely, and you've just touched on Kim Little there. So obviously a big move that we were honoured that Laura Harvey gave us her exclusive thoughts at the time. But we've done one better than that, and Kieran, you've tracked down Kim herself.
Yeah, managed to have a chat with Kim. Thankfully, Seattle Rain organised that one for us pretty quickly, so I had a chat with her. But just before we go to Kim, it's interesting that they also announced the signing of Sydney Leroux this week, which was a massive, massive signing for them. I mean, I don't know if you followed it on Twitter. I'm sure many people did, but people were, you know, it was off the scale. It really, really was. You know, Sydney is, as Laura describes, is probably one of the top three strikers in America, along with Abby Wambach and Alex Morgan. But it was an interesting trade, wasn't it? You know, it was kind of sneaky, but kind of smart as well. You know, they traded for Christy Mewis from Kansas City and gave up Amy Rodriguez, or A-Rod, as she's more commonly known. And we sort of looked at it and thought, well, she's given up a striker. Christy Mewis played most of her season at Kansas in defence last year, but she can play as a winger as well. So you were trying to kind of think, well, how does that one work? But as Laura explained in her interview with us last week, Christy Mewis is a Boston girl. She went to college in Boston. They obviously knew that Boston were interested in signing her. They took her to Seattle and used her as bait to get Sydney Leroux. And we say used her as bait, that makes it sound very negative. But Boston got a lot in return. They got Christy. They got Michelle Batos, who was Seattle's reserve goalkeeper last year. Started the season when Hope Solo was absent. Well, she was very good, mate. I saw her a few games before Hope Solo made a return, and she was really, really good. And obviously, they've got some draft picks as well. So Boston, I think it's a good trade for them. They'll miss Sydney Leroux. Any team would, but I think it's a good deal for them and good deal for Seattle as well.
And I'm sure Seattle aren't finished yet, but let's get to that Kim Little interview, and here it is.
Okay, so we're joined by the Seattle Reign's latest recruit, Kim Little, who signed for the club in the last week. Kim, thanks for joining us on the show. First off, why don't you tell us about how excited you are to be going over to America and playing in the NWSL?
Hi, thank you. Obviously I'm extremely excited, and particularly glad that it's been announced now this week. I'm just so excited to sort of get over there and get started and play for Laura again. And also play with some great players. So it's going to be a great opportunity for me, and I can't wait.
How influential was Laura in the move? Obviously, you played for her at Arsenal. Was it always an ambition of yours to play in America, or was the fact Laura over there was a decisive factor for you?
Yeah, you know, I think even before Laura, I've always had it in my head. You know, I think if I wanted to play away from Britain or England, that America would be the first choice for me. But obviously knowing Laura and, you know, working under her at Arsenal and enjoying that so much and being successful, that obviously, that was the extra pull that I needed. And, that's what kind of, as well as the league being so good, it made, me make that final decision.
How much of Seattle did you see last year, and what are you particularly looking forward to about joining the club?
I didn't see yet. I've not seen many of their games last year, but, you know, I obviously kept an eye out on the league over there, and I think, you know, they definitely improved a lot in over the sort of season, especially towards the end. And I think this year, hopefully, the team looks stronger. That, you know, Seattle's made some great signing in Sydney Leroux, so the team looks strong, and hopefully, we can push on this season and get better.
You mentioned Sydney Leroux, other players at the club, Hope Solo, Megan Rapinoe, mm-hmm. Jess Fishlock. I mean, those are some big names for you to join. You must be really excited about that.
Yeah, I know, it's quite funny to think I'll be playing in the same team as them, to be honest. But I'm excited. I've played against Jess a lot of times in England and for Wales, so I'm excited to play with her. You know, she's a great footballer, and obviously the American players who are, you know, Olympic champions. It's going to be a great experience for me. You know, just to play alongside and hopefully learn off them.
But equally, we'll talk about Arsenal. You've been there a number of years. It must be a bit of a wrench to leave. It's obviously very difficult. Laura said in an interview that I did with her earlier in the week that leaving Arsenal is one of the hardest things a player will have to do when they've played for the club. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, I came to the club when I was 17, so for me to leave, and knowing how much they've sort of given to me over the past 6 years, in terms of not just playing football and learning them, giving me education, the possibility to play and to get education. You know, I've got a lot to thank Arsenal for. So, of course, it was, extremely hard decision to leave.
Is it particularly hard also to leave in the middle of a Champions League campaign? Obviously, Arsenal are through to the last eight, and with Leon out, I think a lot of teams look at it now as thinking they've got a better chance now they're out. Is it more difficult to leave with that prospect?
I think in my head I had to have, the thought of, I was moving to Seattle and not thinking about, the next season for Arsenal, although, it's because the seasons, are summer and the Champions League is still winter, it's just the way it's going to happen. But, it's obviously, I would love to have played in the Champions League next year with Arsenal, but it's obviously not possible with the season in America. But, Arsenal have got a great draw, so I'm sure they'll push on and, we'll be looking to get through to the final.
I know it's probably not one of your concerns because obviously you have to think about your own career, but obviously Jess Fishlock left the WSL last year, you're leaving the WSL this year. Do you think that's going to have an impact on the league? Because you are two big names, and to lose those to America, it can't be good for the calibre of the league.
I don't think so. I think, the league there is still strong. It's got a lot of, the England internationals. It's, a lot, I think a lot more sort of European players are playing there now, especially Liverpool signed quite a few the previous year. And I'm sure that'll happen even more so for next year. So, players are always going to, come and go, but I'm pretty sure the FAWSL will still be a strong league.
No, absolutely. And going back to the challenge ahead in America, what are you hoping to achieve in terms of developing your own game? Very different over there, very quick, very athletic, maybe not as technical as the game over here, but something that you're going to have to develop in your own game, do you think?
Yeah, without a doubt. I think that's, another main reason, for moving is, I want to improve. I want to, a new challenge and to get better. And I know a lot of people, Laura said, Jess has, mentioned before that it's just a different kind of, style of play over there. It's a lot more athletic and faster than, than in England. So I'm looking forward to that, and hopefully that'll improve me as a player as well. So yeah, that's something that I always want to get better, and I'm hoping playing in the league over there will do that.
Some of your teammates at Arsenal have played in America, Kelly Smith, Alex Scott, Gemma Davison. Did you speak to any of them about it, and did they give you any advice?
Yeah, of course. I know Gemma very well, and she's been out a couple of times to America, so I obviously spoke to her a little bit about it. If Ioma DK, my Scottish teammate, she's played in America a few times as well, so I know people who've played there and loved every second of it, so it was nice to get sort of their opinion and their thoughts on it as well, and that definitely helped me as well in making the decision.
And obviously playing out in America can only improve you as a player, and can only be beneficial for the Scotland national team, which is really making strides at the moment, isn't it?
Yeah, Scotland's going, extremely, extremely well at the moment for the team. So hopefully we can continue that into our next qualifier next year. But we're just pleased to get the four wins that we needed. And yeah, of course, a lot of our players are now either playing semi-professional or professional, which I think has helped the national team so much in the past couple of years. And hopefully more players will do that, and it'll just make us even stronger.
Absolutely. Well, Kim, really appreciate the time that you've given us. I know that you're currently enjoying a break out in Montpellier, but we look forward to seeing you in the NWSL, and make sure you keep us updated on how you're getting on out there.
Will do. Thank you very much.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
On the subject of the NWSL, we have to talk about Houston and a potential expansion team there.
Yeah, it was announced last week that Houston Dynamo are potentially going to have an NWSL franchise for 2014, maybe even 2015. But what's interesting is that they are taking deposits for season tickets next year. So it'd be interesting to see, if there is enough uptake, what that would mean in terms of them joining the league. It would mean that they would become the ninth team to join the NWSL. I know that there are a few people on Twitter who are a little bit worried about that, especially Portland fans, because Alex Morgan's boyfriend does play for the Houston Dynamo's MLS side. So you do wonder, if the expansion team is added, would Alex Morgan go over to Houston?
That'd be a hell of a trade. Hell of a trade. Right. Let's switch to the national team, and they've been in action against Brazil. Obviously, a glamour friendly there. What was the score?
It was 4-1 to the US, and you expected it to be closer, although Brazil did have Marta missing because obviously Tirassol were in Champions League action. She was missing, but then equally, Whitney Engen was missing, Megan Klingenberg was missing, so that Kristen Press was missing, all in action for Tirassol.
Megan. Sorry, I've just got to jump in quickly. Whitney Engen. Have you seen her goal yet? The back heel, it's exquisite. Whitney, if you're listening, I take my hat off to you. That is one hell of a goal for a centre-half. Kieran, please continue.
Yeah, it was a back heel in the Champions League, wasn't it? Immense goal for a defender. But yeah, it was a 4-1 win for the US, and they were pretty dominant, although the player of the match was actually Hope Solo, which tells you something, that Brazil certainly had their chances, and they did. And Hope Solo was absolutely outstanding. She denied a number of one-on-one chances for Brazil, but as you'd expect from the Americans, clinical. Absolutely clinical. Sydney Leroux with two, Abby Wambeck with a penalty. And congratulations to Erica Timrak. Came on as a sub literally within a couple of minutes. She'd scored her first international goal. So the US looking incredibly strong and finishing the year undefeated.
Absolutely. Well, so well done to them. Hope Solo, even for the goal, she only got beaten because she misjudged the ball's bounce. I was watching it again and again and again because I thought that she should have done better with that shot. But actually, she's expecting a higher bounce of the ball. Her hand is well placed to tip it around a post and it just sneaks underneath. So can hardly blame her for that. But before that game, there was a nice little story that emerged before that. Do you want to just share that with us?
Yeah, it was something that was floating around on Twitter and I wanted to investigate it more. The American women's national team coach broke down after an open training session, and it meant that they were slightly stranded, but they had two young individuals who came to their rescue, and here's what they had to say about it. Okay, so it's not every day that you get the opportunity to meet your heroes, certainly not in the circumstances that our next two guests on the show met theirs. I'm joined by 14-year-olds Carly Painter and Serena Cardozo from Orlando. Girls, thanks for joining us on the show. Tell us about a certain meeting that you had with a few of your heroes from the US women's national team.
Yeah, so we were leaving open training and we ended up right behind their bus, and the bus just stopped for like 10 minutes and it wasn't moving, and so the players started getting off the bus, and so I just stuck my head out the window and I was like, hey, do you guys need a ride? And then Abby Wambach, Hope Solo and Carly Lloyd just hopped in the back.
I mean, what was that like? It must have been quite surreal. You'd obviously just a few minutes previously seen them training on the pitch, and all of a sudden they're sitting in the back of your car. How surreal was that for you?
Yeah, it was so cool. It was the best day of my life.
Where did you have to drive them? Where did you have to take them?
We were taking them to their hotel. They actually got us Abby's phone. She typed in her hotel and it brought us to the one on the opposite side. So our 15 to 20 minute ride ended up being half hour.
So you spent half an hour driving along with Carly Lloyd, Abby Wambeck and Hope Solo, three of the biggest footballers in women's football in the world. What did you talk about for half an hour?
Well, we were pretty speechless, so they ended up doing most of the talking, and they asked us a lot of questions, like, what did we want to be when we grow up, and what did we want to study?
One more question. You obviously had the opportunity to speak to them about a number of things. Were there any jokes shared or anything like that?
there were tons. Like, I learned that Abby actually plays the cello, which I did too, and I didn't know that. Like, I know a lot of things about her, but I never knew that. And
you mentioned how they were, like, they were really comfortable with us, where I had my friend actually call me because she didn't believe that I was sitting in a car with the three of them. And they took my phone and they talked, all three of them talked to her on the phone. And that made her life, as well as them knowing that they just talked to a huge fan.
Yeah, and Abby took a selfie with her.
A brilliant story, girls, and it's a pleasure to have you on, and thank you for telling us your story. That's Carly and Serena from Orlando, who met members of the US Women's National Team after their bus broke down recently, and we'll be back just after this break.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.
Well, what a wonderful story to end the show on. So all that's left for us to do is just to thank everybody who was on the show. And Kieran, if we're quick, we can catch that after party.
We can catch that after party, but we have got a few details that we need to reel off. Obviously, if you want to follow us on Twitter, we're on @WFPod. We have a blog, thewfblog.wordpress.com. We will get some more content on there. Apologies, it's been a bit dry of late, but we have got some blogs coming up. And if you want to email us, you can do. We are on thewfpod@gmail.com. So do get in touch with us. And we will have a competition, a really, really good competition, in our next episode, which we will announce. Or we might even get the person who provided us with the prize to announce that one.
Absolutely. Now, you're all business. Lighten up. Come on, let's go.
The Women's Football Podcast, shining a light on the women's game.